right. It's Tuesday night. It's 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you are listening to the Ooze Luminous Edition. This is your host, Jason Sorrell, and your host, Rotten Biohazard. Rotten, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it? Not much, man. How's it going?
It's going all right. Thought I'd open the show up. We're going to be talking about the military tonight. We're going to be talking about the nation's military-industrial complex, the way our military is being used. And this is kind of an extension of the conversation we had some time ago, one of the first times I think you called into the show. But given that Veterans Day is coming up on a Friday, I thought it'd be appropriate to kind of talk about what's going on with our modern military, what is involved in warfare, and what our thoughts on it are. But before we got into that conversation, I wanted to bring up the national test of the emergency broadcast system tomorrow. Have you heard about this, or have you been following this?
No, I haven't, man. I'm so used to now just getting the, that nice little beep there, once a month across multiple networks. Thing hurts my ears. I absolutely hate it, like you wouldn't believe.
Sure. And well, with that test, the emergency broadcast system, the exact thing you're talking about, that was either a local or state-initiated process. And what television stations needed to do is they needed to be prepared to cut into their programming with the governor's word or with, if there was an emergency initiated somewhere, in the upper echelons of government. And the company, the studio, the broadcast station would cut into their own programming and make whatever announcement needed to be made. They would, they would have the feed already from whoever, is putting the message out. It'd be like a weather alert, type thing.
Yeah.
But it was voluntary. Okay. It was part of their licensing. It was a voluntary requirement, if you will, part of their licensing, but they had control of it. They cut into their own programming. They broadcast the message or what have you, and that's what they did. Okay. Tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time, so 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, there'll be the first ever national test of the emergency alert system. And the way this is going to differ is that it will be on every public television station and every radio station. So, so your major news network, your major networks, NBC, CBS, ABC,
yep,
Fox, and every radio station on the air, they will be all broadcasting the same message for 60 seconds. And instead of them getting the feed and then rebroadcasting it, it is going to be directly transmitted from basically the White House. It's not coming directly from the White House, obviously, but basically folks in Washington, the people in Washington are going to cut into the programming, and for 60 seconds, what you'll hear will be coming from the government. And it's going to be everyone in the nation will hear this message. So,
any idea what this message is going to be? Is it going to be something that's just kind of marquee across the screen, or is it just what it's going to be exactly? Do you know?
It's going to be the same, from my understanding, it's going to be pretty much the same as the type of emergency broadcast that we're used to. The only difference is that, like Fox, okay, every once in a while they'll do the emergency broadcast. Well, they choose to do the emergency broadcast and meet their, mandatory requirement, their monthly test, at the time that's most opportune for them to do so. So it might be early in the morning or late in the afternoon when their viewership is really low. That's when they're doing the broadcast. That's when they're doing their test, okay? And that was their privilege, basically, their way of meeting this requirement. This government national broadcast system, this national broadcast system, that option is taken away from those TV stations. So the government will be able to break into programming anytime they want, whether it's, during an emergency, which is what the system's for, or if, let's say, a news story is being broadcast that night and at the same time at a lot of channels that the administration, Republican or Democrat, whoever's in power, doesn't like the news story, they can cut in with the emergency broadcast system.
So you see this actually being something that's going to be abused quite readily.
I'm seeing it as the potential for abuse is huge. There's a whole bunch of other things. I mean, this is coming from, in my mind, this is actually coming from the conversion from analog to digital television.
Yeah.
Okay. this, you know, forced conversion from a technology that was adequate, that was working, to a technology that it's more flexible, I admit. The, you know, the picture quality, sound quality is better. There's more flexibility. I mean, TBS right now has on one signal four different versions of itself broadcasting different, you know, different shows all the time now. So obviously there's some flexibility, but that shows you also how dense the information can be on that digital carrier wave compared to analog. So
yep.
You could actually, in theory, and I know I'm going way down the rabbit hole with this idea here, but you've got the national government who has a direct feed. They have a national network where they can cut into your programming at any time they want to cut into it. They could also, in theory, broadcast a signal underneath the regular broadcasting. Okay. So, you know, if they want to test different harmonics, if they want to test different images, if they want to test just different things, they can do that at random now. They could use it for, you know, media control. The media has been complicit with our government for a long time, depending on who's in power. But now the government could block out the media. I mean, if they got something big going on and they don't want anybody, you know, talking about what's going on through the airwaves, you could just turn on your television or radio and hear nothing but white noise, hear nothing but static. You have no clue as to what's going on. You've been blacked out as far as the media is concerned. You could also have, in theory, you could have a national broadcast, an emergency warning to the whole nation simultaneously stating that radiation levels due to some cosmic event are going to spike on this particular day. So everybody needs to stay inside, that if they're under a roof, they are more likely to be protected. And there you got crowd control right there.
Now,
okay.
You see this is
so,
– you also see that you basically brought up the idea of basically putting in sound underneath an actual program. Do you see this as also an implication with the idea of let's call it programming someone's mind? Or, for instance, the sound waves being used to subdue the person or even to make them feel something that they might not be feeling at that particular time.
Right, right. Yeah, you could – I mean, it's already a given that certain noises are irritating. So if you have a signal going under some during a particular person's broadcast, whatever it is, and you're the administration and you want people to dislike what's being said, well then you push that little that signal underneath the current broadcast that irritates you. So you associate irritation with that particular person. Same thing with a message that is a message that the administration wants to push. Well then you have a carrier signal that actually stimulates some, you know, pleasurable reaction so that you find that, you know, whatever that is, more favorable. And we're talking about things that are not only has this stuff been tested, I mean this stuff, you know, there were tests in movie theaters in the 70s and everything where, you know, they had different images and different sounds played through the throughout the movie that would make people more thirsty or more hungry. So it's not that far fetched. But the idea that the government will now have the ability to flip a switch and access all media outlets simultaneously is dangerous. And they're doing it, of course, in the name of, you know, of safety, of security.
Of course,
you know,
isn't that how it always goes, though? Isn't that how it always goes, though? They always do something under the guise that is going to either A, make life for the American people easier, B, make their life easier, or they just do it because, hell, it's a good moneymaker.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And this is, when you talk about a totalitarian government, one of the first things, Adolf Hitler, one of the first things he said that they had to take control of was the media. They had to take control of the newspapers I think they had radio stations back then. They had to take control of all that so that, you know, they made sure that only their message was the message that was pushed.
Well, dude, that's already the case now.
This is a step in that direction, I think.
You know, I already think that actually is, because if you actually look at the whole idea, you look at your branches of government, the one sort of shadow branch that when you were in school that was never mentioned was the media. The media was meant to police the government. They were meant to be the unbiased observers and actually report what was going on. whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. I don't know about you,
right.
man, but the only thing I've been seeing for the last years is celebrity bullshit.
Right, right. Well, yeah, and it's the media has often been referred to as the fourth branch of government. But, you know, the observers of the governors, basically, the people's eyes on what's going on. And, yeah, the idea of objective media has been dead for decades. That no longer exists. So, and it is. It's a lot of, and this is, well, here's the problem, too. A lot of people go, oh, well, the media is complicit in this. The media is complicit in that. I caution that, you know, against that opinion, because the media, despite their leanings one way or another politically, they are in the business of providing a product. And that product is whatever information the people demand. So
yep.
if they were to put out the straight truth, you know, if they were to put out an unobjective opinion, well, then their viewership drops. So if you give idiot programming to the idiots that are demanding it.
And maybe I'm reading too much into things, and you know, it's a very distinct possibility, mind you, but have you ever noticed that when something really is starting to go kind of sideways politically, they always come up with some celebrity stunt or some goof-up to basically shift attention away from what really matters?
Oh, well, I would say that that's now the media's purpose 24/7, is to shift attention away from things that actually matter. That you turn on a mainstream news broadcast and you are not going to hear about anything that's important. That if you want to get the straight dope in the news, basically, you have to go to a European news source or an Asian news source or even a Middle Eastern news source to get a real clue as to what is actually going on.
And that is actually quite a sad statement that you have to go outside of your own damn country to actually get news. That's a sad statement.
Well, again, it's not because I wouldn't purely attribute that to the powers that be in our nation trying to control information, although now they have a new tool that will make it easier for them to do so. I think it's because the American people, by and large, are stupid. And the media recognizes that if you're going to offer a product to a particular group of people, that product has to be interesting to them. Stupid people like stupid things. They like the information in small little bits. They like it to be easy to understand. And if they have to think too hard about what it is, they aren't interested. They want to hate the things they've learned to hate. They want to love the things they've learned to love. Giving them new information and new ideas frightens them. So that's the product they push. And then, of course, it's a vicious cycle because then, of course, people learn to expect that. They assume that's what they should be interested in. Why should I give a shit about the environment? Why should I give a shit about what's going on the southern border? Why should I give a shit about what's going on in the Middle East or in the Pacific Coast or whatever when everybody's concerned about what's going on in American Idol? That's where my focus should be because I'm a fucking sheep and I want to be like everybody else.
And, you know, the answer to that question and why you should care is very, very easy. Because one of those brown people are going to come over and bomb you. That's a very real possibility. Well, at least it could be a possibility. We don't really know whether or not anyone in the Middle East can come over and bomb us. But, hey, it's always a possibility, which makes it a lot more fun and interesting.
All right, but it's hard to get laid talking about, the potential for Al-Qaeda to deliver a dirty nuke into the United States, or to talk about the danger of solar flares that's being predicted by scientists in the next 2 or 3 years, or the shady dealings that our governments are engaged in and the Federal Reserve. Those kinds of things aren't, you know, panty-dropping conversation topics. So,
apparently, man, you and I go for different women.
Right, right. Well, that's clearly the case, but if you're out there on the make, you know, what are you going to talk about? Are you going to talk about shit that matters, or are you going to talk about just shit to let the chick know that, you know, and the women are doing the same thing. What do I got to say to let people know that I'm hip, I'm cool, that I'm, you know, I'm confident and happy-go-lucky? Well, what's going on, I don't know, the X Factor? I think I saw a commercial for that while I was watching football this weekend. Yeah, what's going on with that? Or Fear Factor's coming back or something like that. You know, that's the kind of shit that people are into. So, but yeah, I mean, here you go. One more step in the march towards that eventual Big Brother society a national broadcast system where your government can cut into your broadcast signal at will and transmit whatever data or information they want to transmit.
You know, all I have to say, man, is I'm surprised they didn't do it sooner. I would have figured Bush Jr. would have pushed that through. He didn't, but I'm kind of surprised.
You know, I think it wouldn't matter who was in the office. Okay, I subscribe to that theory that it doesn't matter who the fuck it is. Barack Obama has proven to be just another suit. The administrative position is just that. It's an administrative position. If you don't meet the qualifications to be the administrator, if you don't fulfill that role for whoever, you know, actually makes that decision, your guys are up there to be elected right now. Romney, fucking Perry, Obama, Hillary Clinton.
I don't think she's running, actually.
They did some polls testing whether or not, you know, how well she would do against the Republicans. So while she's not going to be running, I'm sure she's not going to be running against Obama this time around, unless Obama really takes a shit on himself. It's going to be a given that Obama's going to go. If Obama wins this election, Hillary will be the next Democratic nominee. Unless Bill Clinton has his way and it's changed, the Constitution's changed to allow a president to have three terms, which Clinton's on the news talking about that today. But if Obama wins again,
a couple hundred years, hasn't
what's
it?
That?
That hasn't been done
what's
in
that?
Well over. That hasn't been done in well right around 200 years. That president actually served more than two terms.
We've had presidents that have served more than two terms. I don't know when the two-term limit was. Yeah, it hasn't been a while. It's been a while since it's actually happened, and it was established. The last president to successfully run for more than two terms, and the way it was, I want to say, might have been Teddy Roosevelt. I'm not sure. But the way that it worked out, too, and the way Clinton's talking about it, is what you do is you would run for two terms, and then you would take a term off, and then if you thought you could win an election again, you'd run for another term.
Nice.
So that's the intent, that you're not consistently the president of the United States. But, yeah, I imagine if Obama wins or if a Republican wins, the Republican will probably be, if Obama's a one-term president, I imagine the next Republican president will also be a one-term president.
But, you know,
unless they're
–
what's that?
Go ahead, man. Sorry. Go ahead, man. I didn't mean to cut you off there. Go ahead.
Well, unless there's some sort of war, some major disaster, I mean, because that's really, in my opinion, what kept Bush in the office, was that, you know, he had these wars going on. Obama has, you know, even though he inherited the wars, he's not really pushing any new wars. There's no new agenda that makes the American people go, nope, we got to have our guy still in office. So I think it's Bush having those wars kept him in the office. If Obama's not, whoever will be president for the next term, that'll be a one-term president because Clinton's going to run against them. And she's got, if it were today, she not only would beat all the Republican candidates, she would beat Obama as well, according to the polls that I've been watching.
This is my opinion. I think that really the presidency alone should be limited to only one term. That's it. One term in your lifetime. Another thing we need to do is also lower the age in which you can run for Senate and run for the presidency. I think that in a lot of ways we need to get rid of a lot of these old fucks. We need to get them right out of there because they have the same agenda they've had since the 70s. Same rhetoric, same, you know, party line. They need to simply just be taken out back and shot in the head. I mean, that figuratively, folks, not literally, okay, let's put it that way, but they really do need to be put more into check, as it were.
You can't have a president of the United States win an election on a radically different platform, unfortunately. It would be nice to have a president that actually stood up and said he was really about change, and that he had some radical ideas about the direction of our government, and he would get elected, because I think most of the people in the United States want that kind of person, but most of the people in the United States don't vote, unfortunately. Most of the people in the United States that do vote actually thinks it matters who's in that office, what president they do or do not get. That president, comparatively, whoever he is, has very little power in our government. He's the administrator. He's the executive branch. He has veto power on certain laws or certain bills, but that's it. He's a suit representing – he's the face guy for our government, the front man. He's David Lee Roth to R. Van Halen, basically, the president of the United
yep.
States. So, you know, being concerned about that election, while it should be a concern, who's going to be our representative in that office, more to the point is who are our legislators? Who are the people actually crafting law? Because not only, are they the ones making the law, they tend to be there for life. You know, you get elected into this, I'm for term limits on the Senate and the House of Representatives. But until that happens, you elect some guy senator or representative, and you might not get that guy out of there again if you don't like the job he's doing. That's where – go ahead.
Shit, man, look at Kennedy there, one of the Kennedys there. He was in Senate for how many years before he finally, kicked the bucket?
Yeah, he was in there forever, since the 70s. Robert Byrd, I think I'm saying the guy, if that's the guy I'm thinking of, he was in there until he was 80-something years old. And this guy was a Klansman at one point. This guy was, a flaming racist at one point. Still, kept his seat, still stayed, he was the incumbent. He was unmovable. So, unbeatable in election. And that's just the way it works.
Of course,
so,
he paid off the right people, greased the right wheels. Of course, he never got out of there. Shit.
But, that's the thing. Did he pay off the right people, or did he just say yes to the right people? Did he just accept the money from the right people? That's the problem with our political system. That's what the Occupy movement is all about. It's about how there's money that's injected into the system, and as long as you fill your suit correctly, as long as you're willing to take money from the right people, you will stay in government. You will stay a political animal, basically. So you don't have – forget your own ideas. Forget your own ideology. Forget your own values. As long as you're willing to cater to the right people's needs and demands, you will be a successful politician.
And what is it these days that American people are actually demanding? They're demanding jobs. They're demanding lower unemployment, some higher wages. Shit, why not? They're demanding better, health care. If an actual presidential candidate actually took a look at the hot issues and had one of his aides or her aides, then we have, this fucking Dyke Bachman in there, but had one of the aides actually write up a nice speech, with all these hot topics in there, that would drive them over the edge. That would drive the American people over the edge, and that would drive the person right into the White House, bar none.
Yeah, the problem is, though, that person won't have the backing of the money people. That sure, you've got recently the November 5th was the Move Your Money from the Banks to the Credit Unions Day, the Occupy the Banks or whatever day, okay? And billions of dollars were actually moved over the month of October from banks to credit unions. But as somebody was pointing out today in an article I read, it may have actually helped the banks for that money to be moved, because what was moved out of the banks were all the little bullshit accounts, or the checking accounts where this guy only had $50 in his account and he's living paycheck to paycheck. The average size of the account moving from a bank to a credit union over the month of October was $634.
Shit.
Change. Okay? So the banks were going, hell yeah, get those bums out. Get those people out of here. They cause us problems with the bullshit overdrafts and everything else. Get them out of here. So they go to these credit unions. Those people are going to find life at a credit union is much harsher than life at a bank. I would say get your money into a credit union, because you actually own that, that institution, whereas the bank you don't. But, for a lot of these banks, the whole move from a bank to a credit union was actually doing them a favor. Now, if you turned around and said to these banks, if Obama were to actually sit there and say, and I would love for him to say this, hey, you know what? These student loans that everybody has outstanding, especially in our current economic environment, a lot of these degrees that people earned that they thought they were going to be able to go out and get a job for, well, they can't get a job in those particular degrees. So it's not fair, or it's not feasible for us to expect them to pay off the student loans on a degree that they can't earn any money with. So let's go ahead and just forgive those loans.
I don't see Obama doing it even by the time he's out of office. I really don't. Maybe the next president, whoever the hell, you know, gets in there, maybe after a year or two in office, might go for it. But
that's my point is that the handlers, the people that actually are in power making the decisions that tell a president what he can or cannot do to stay in office, to maintain his political career, those people, the banks, will tell him that hell you're going to forgive those debts. That's not going to happen. So it doesn't matter who's in office, Obama or somebody else, if the banks tell that man, no, you are not going to forgive those debts, the banks are going to win on this. So that's why Obama right now is talking about doing it incrementally. You know, we're going to instead of 15% of your income, the banks can only take 10%. That you're going to, instead of having 25 years worth of debt, you only have it for 20 years. And the fucked up thing about that is the statute of limitations on like 20 years on a college loan is only if you're able to make payments on it during those 20 years.
Yep.
You have to make 20 years worth of payments.
Right.
It's not just I write it out for 20 years without you, because if you can't afford to make a payment, right, if you're struggling and you can't afford to pay on it, it doesn't matter if it's going to be forgiven in 5 years. There's not a goddamn thing you can do.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter, but it gives them a nice soundbite. It makes those students think like, well, he's trying to do something for us, you know, but what does it mean?
So, kind of makes me want to wait on some large encumbering student loans for a few more years, just to see where things go.
Right, hoping that it'll change, hoping that it'll get better. It's going to be a matter of people finally waking up and going, you know what? It doesn't mean anything. It would make more sense, first of all, not to get yourself in a situation where you have to rely on the government. That means you don't go out and have a family. That's purely what it means. You don't have children, because once you have children, they've got you by the balls, because they can control you through your children. They, you know, they can take your children away, and that threat will keep you from stepping out of line. But you sit there and go, you know what, I got a job, and I've got student loans, and I haven't paid my student loans in forever. So when the government comes in or the loan debt collector comes in and goes, hey, look, man, if you don't start paying your bills, we're going to start garnishing your paychecks.
Yep.
That first paycheck or the garnish your paycheck, that guy quits his job. You know, quits his job and moves. Fuck it. Come find me again. Come talk to me in about 2 or 3 more years when you find me again. Because these bureaucracies are slow.
Oh, yes, they are.
Right. So yeah, man. I mean, there's so much bullshit going on with the government. So much. And this national broadcast thing is just, you know, one more step in the wrong direction. So
we've been going down the slope for the last 10 years. It's not a big surprise.
10 years?
Well,
yeah,
okay,
fine.
No. The whole slant downward got a little more steep within the last 10.
Oh, yeah. And I can attribute that directly to as the speed of our technology and the speed of our society increases, well, then, of course, the speed of our government and this political crash increases. And we hammer this point over and over again on this show. What it's going to take is it's going to take the people going, we don't need those fuckers, that we can choose to exist without them. And once enough people start making that choice, instead of trying to work within the system but just saying fuck the system, that's when you're going to see some change happening. Of course, you know, Abby Hoffman, the champion of this idea, basically, he died, and his last statement when he committed suicide, when he killed himself, was something along the lines of, they're too big, we can't win.
Yep.
And I hope Mr. Hoffman is wrong. But we are halfway through the show yet already, and we haven't even talked about our topic. So I'm going to run the commercial. I'm going to run the commercial real quick, and then we'll get into the military.
All right.
Creative Oddities Studios.
Creative Oddity Studios. Stickers, t-shirts, skateboard decks, lighters, prints, posters, and many other fine pieces of merchandise. It's some of the best damn artwork you'll find on the internet. The creative assault and meandering of Jason Sorrell, T.C. Downey, and Vanessa Lee. Coleman! What is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to visit Creative Oddity Studios. Bondage art, digital manipulation, erotica, demon girls, fantasy, tattoo art, horror, occult, and we dare to call it artwork.
It's like candy, but for your eyes!
Check out our very popular books on the occult and Satanism, now available in hard copy and downloadable format.
Hoo-wah!
Check out our blogs on art, tattoo work, what life is like as a tattoo artist, social issues, philosophy, lowbrow culture in Austin, Texas, and eminentmind.info. You'll enjoy them.
If you can read!
Creative Oddities Studios. www.creativeoddities.com.
I like the naked girls.
Creative Oddities Studios.
All right. Creative Oddities Studios. You there?
Hey, man, that commercial dude cracks me up every time.
I'm getting ready to do some sort of commercial for the Ooze. So we have something else to play during our hour, 2 hour shows. But anyways, the military. We got half an hour to talk about this, so we kind of want to run through it quick, I guess. My perspective, of course, is that we are engaged in all these different conflicts over the world. That Teddy Roosevelt was the person to really push the idea that our military, the United States, should be the police force of the world, basically. That we're literally Team America. And it goes against my idea or what my thinking as a former soldier of what a combat unit is to be used for. If you're not defending your territory or attacking your enemy with the intention that you are going to you annihilate them and take over their territory, you should not be fighting a war. And we're engaged in Iraq, Afghanistan. We just got done with Libya. We've got things going on in Yemen and other places and everything else. We've got this border war with Mexico going on right now. So we're engaged on multiple fronts, all over political issues that have very little to do with the idea of either defending our territory or annihilating our enemies.
Yep. And see, and here's really the kicker when it comes to war, man. I mean, the U.S. sends troops in, we bomb the shit out of some people. When we get things done in that respect, we're really good at bombing some people. But then what do? We turn around and rebuild what we just bombed. How the hell does that make sense? We pay not only to bomb them, but to rebuild them. That is
right, the way
we ask backwards.
The way we handled Germany is probably the best example of a well-handled theater of war after the fact. And the only reason we handled Germany the way we did is because we were concerned about Russia in East Germany and the danger that they represented it to represent us. So the only reason we handled Germany in the manner that we did was because we were concerned about a new enemy. But Germany, we remained an occupying force. We are still a very visible, very clear presence in Germany to this day. That the German military, it's mandatory for every male in Germany to be a member of the military for at least a year, I think. But you see more American soldiers in Germany than you see German soldiers.
Yep.
German soldiers until sometime in the 1990s weren't even allowed to leave their country. Okay. Regardless if they were, they couldn't go out and join NATO forces, they couldn't do shit, they were not allowed to leave Germany.
Damn.
So we occupied it, and what we did was, we helped rebuild them, but we made sure that we rebuilt Germany along the lines of an American model. For good or for better or for worse, that's what we engaged in. Right now in Germany, it is fineable. You can be arrested for giving the Roman salute. You know, for asking, hey, have you seen Kyle? Seen Kyle? He's this high. Have you seen Kyle? If you do that, you can go to jail.
Okay.
Right. But the scary thing is that there still remains a Nazi party in Germany. That the Nazi party in Germany almost came back to power in 1992.
That's hysterical, man.
That's a topic for another show entirely. But you go into a Schwarzkopf, and we went into Iraq. We bombed the shit out of them, okay? So that when the ground soldiers actually rolled down the street trying to get into Baghdad, they were running into troops, you know, soldiers. If this is the fourth largest army in the world, the Iraq army and everything, none of them had a uniform that matched. Most of them didn't have shoes that matched and shit. You know, with their AK-47s, they're holding them above their head as we're rolling by, and they're going, no more boom, no more boom. They didn't want any more fucking bombs dropped on them, okay? There were places that were so bombed, the destruction so total, that, you know, the choppers would roll through, and these are warrant officers and officers flying these choppers, and they would send commands back to the ground troops, hey, you're going to deviate. You're not going to go through this valley because there are so many bodies, they didn't want the soldiers to be demoralized by what they would see there. Okay? And Schwarzkopf said to, it was George Bush the first, basically, said to him, let me go all the way into Baghdad. We can take over Iraq. We don't have to worry about Iraq going after Kuwait or anybody else anymore. They will not be a threat in the Middle East. We can get Saddam Hussein now. We can take over the country. This is the same thing that, I can't remember the guy's name now. It's famous. Patton said, you know, let's push all the way across Japan. You know, let's just wipe them out. Let's just fucking get it done with. It's the only way to secure victory in a conflict. Whether the conflict is right or wrong, it's the only way to secure victory. You annihilate your enemy. You take over the territory. And the indigenous people, you get them to remodel their society based on your parameters.
Yep,
okay?
That's how it used to be for centuries, man, back in the day. That's how it was
done.
You kidnapped any people still alive in that township or in that settlement. You made them slaves. You plundered the shit out of everything and took it for yourself.
Right. You treated your enemies like enemies. And the spoils of war, okay? Here's something to fuck with you a little bit. The soldiers, we went into Iraq on our taxpayers' dime, all right, during Desert Storm. These people in Kuwait have so much oil money. They are so ridiculously wealthy that there is not a Kuwaiti citizen that performed, or at least at that time, that performed a manual labor task. Everybody, they're fry cooks, they're garbage disposal people, they're street cleaners, they're maids. All of those people came from another country.
Nice.
These people said to our general, said to our president, we want to make sure, and this, I mean, and you think about this, this is part of Arab culture, okay? This is one of the upsides of Arab culture. We talked about Islam and everything else, the issue with Islam and everything else. One of the upsides is if you have a debt, you pay that debt. So the Kuwaiti government said, hey, you know what, how about this? You had like 100, you know, I don't know how many thousands of troops you have here. We want to make sure that we give every troop from that E-2 enlisted soldier that just got a basic training all the way up to the generals. We want to give them each $1 million. And we got that kind of jack. And our government said no because we're not mercenaries.
Yeah, okay. Finally defined mercenary.
Okay, well, yeah, we're not mercenaries that can be blatantly hired. Apparently, we can be rented though with some backroom deals and shit. But this was the kind of, you know, soldiers would go into a territory, and if you captured weapons, if you captured money, if you captured women, well, if you can get them the fuck out of that country, they're yours. That's your shit. The spoils of war.
Well, shit, man. They went into Baghdad and they raided Saddam Hussein's, you know, palace. And that place was a palace. Most of the soldiers walked out of there with priceless art, artifacts, everything. Sent it home and sold it.
Right, and the way we treat those things now is those are considered, you know, property of the Iraqi people. It's like what the Iraqi people allowed Saddam Hussein to come into power. Of course, you know, he had help from the United States. That's another story entirely. The Iraqi people allowed Saddam Hussein to come into power. So if Saddam Hussein gets his ass kicked, well, the Iraqi people get their ass kicked. If you turn fucking you turn Iraq into a fucking shopping mall and Afghanistan into its parking lot. That's what you need to do with that shit. Another aspect of the whole military process, you know, so we fight wars half-assed now. We go in with the intention that, okay, we're going to bomb the shit out of you, and then we're going to be your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the guy you trust, the guy who just punched you in the mouth, the guy who just broke your nose. And I said, oh, everything's cool, buddy. Let's shake hands and be over it. Yeah, until you can kick me in the nuts next time. That's not the way to do things. You're not going to make an enemy your friend. It just doesn't happen unless they're.
Here's the thing, man. We've kicked them in the nuts many times. We bombed the shit out of Iraq quite a few times, yet they still trust us. Who's the
right,
stupider
well,
one?
Well,
us or them?
They trust us to a degree. The people, there are a lot of people in Iraq that, well, there are some people in the cities that want us to stay. There are people, most of the people in the country and everything else, they want us out. The government is half and half. They want to be seen as an Islamic nation. You know, they want to be recognized as, you know, standing in solidarity with the brothers in the Middle East, which means that they're anti the United States. The problem, but they, of course, they want us to remain in there because they need our soldiers and our equipment and everything else to police their own borders. That they know if we pull out, their military doesn't have the strength to defend itself against Al-Qaeda. It doesn't have the strength to defend itself against Iran. It just doesn't. It doesn't exist. It's not there yet. The other thing with the United States. I mean, I think I'm probably quoting this incorrectly, but there's a saying in the Middle East that the problem with, you know, the U.S. is that they're too often busy stabbing themselves in the back. That, you know, it's one administration shifting to another administration. That you'll never, one day you're getting weapons, you're getting support from them, and then you get a new administration in place, and now they're against you.
Here, man, here's the beauty of most of these nations in the Middle East. They survived just fine for thousands of years without the U.S. coming in to save them. They did it all on their own. And as far as I'm concerned,
right,
they can do it again. We don't need to be there. We never needed to be there in any real sense.
Well, they still see us as crusaders. They still see us as, you know, Christian Western European people coming into their nations and trying to change the way that they live, trying to enforce our religious views upon them. And in many ways, they're correct. Of course, we're being there's a disconnect between the people and the people that actually live in the country and the government. And it doesn't matter whether you're in Egypt, where you kind of have a democracy, even Iraq, where you kind of have this, or, you know, Saudi Arabia, where you have, you know, kings, basically, you have shahs and stuff like that. The people want to see an Islamic nation. Their primary is, you know, primary Islam is their religion and everything else. They want to see a homogenous Islamic nation, no matter what the form of government. They want that to be the primary thing. So if you show up, you know, we're from Europe, but we're Christians, we're not Islamic, and we're the strongest military force in your country, that's problematic for a people. I don't care what your religion is, that they should have an issue with that. If we were to pull out, yes, it would cause turmoil. The people in power don't want the United States to leave, but the people don't want us there. So,
yep.
Yeah, we get the hell out. We let them, you know, tear each other apart, and it's only when they come into our country that we go and just and tear them a new asshole. You've seen the movie Swordfish, right?
Yeah, actually, I did.
Right. I don't understand why that isn't our policy. That if you blow up a building in one of our cities, we're going to come and blow up one of your cities.
Yeah,
this is a philosophy that they understand, that they recognize this, and when it happens enough, when some nut job decides that he's going to, you know, throw some money behind some airplane flying into buildings, those people will find that guy and they'll tear him apart in the streets because they don't want their city destroyed. Like, no, man, Osama, you're from here, and they'll figure out where you're from and they'll wipe us off the planet.
It's definitely a sad state of affairs.
Right, right. I guess another angle I kind of wanted to explore on this is, again, this is coming from a former soldier. This is a discussion that we actually had. When you're in the military, there's a lot of opportunity to talk about military theory, to talk about different aspects of technology and everything else. The weapon systems I've seen, it's just some mind-blowing weapon systems, and you just hope this stuff gets implemented. The Predator drones, you know, I was around when that stuff was being developed. You know, the GPS systems that were being used, our laser-guided targeting systems and everything else, is just amazing technology. One of the questions we raised during a kind of, you know, discussion about military theory was, why don't we have automated weapon systems? The technology's there. Why are we still sending soldiers into fight wars?
Because it's cheaper to pay off a soldier's dead family than it is to build a mass army of automated soldiers and have one of them goes out the tube. That's a pretty big monetary loss to the military. It's cheaper to pay off a family of dead soldier.
You're reaching a point, though, where the difference in cost is negligible.
Yeah.
Okay. It's cheaper to pay off for a dead soldier. I think the health insurance I had, the life insurance I had, was $200,000, which, you know, isn't much. But if you got a soldier who's wounded, you got a soldier who has a disability, you're going to be paying him for the rest of his life. And his medical expenses can be pretty significant, okay? If you've got a tank, all right, I'm not talking about developing robots, all right? You've got a tank. You've got an Abrams. Let's talk about something I do know about. You got the Paladin artillery, your mobilized artillery system. Okay, it's a 155-millimeter cannon. All right, it fires artillery shells. Just this big, beautiful beast of machine. It's on treads and everything else. All right.
Yep.
The machine guns, the 50-caliber machine guns that can be mounted on the gunner's turret. They have an option where this machine gun can be controlled from inside the vehicle. So you don't have to be outside behind the machine gun looking down its sight anymore to fire it. You can be inside looking at a monitor and moving a joystick and shooting at things from inside the howitzer itself.
Yep, they have that same thing with a small missile launchers on most of your, you know, nice military Humvees basically as well.
Right. These howitzers now have onboard computers. They have their own targeting systems. It used to be that you would have two guys who would get orders from the fire control people over the radio. So fire control would give you your fire mission. They would give you your coordinates. One guy set the left to right direction of the cannon. The other guy set the up and down direction of the cannon. Okay, that's the way these things were aligned and aimed. Now the orders come down the pipe. Somebody types in the particular, you know, the coordinates or whatever, and the cannon aims itself.
Yep.
Now basically the soldiers, all they do is they show up, you know, they get to where the cannon's supposed to be, and they calibrate it to make sure that they're all aligned, so that when those, you know, when those targeting, you know, instructions come down, they're actually pointing where they want them to point. Okay. It used to be these cannons would travel in not squads. They would travel in platoons of eight, okay? And you'd set up in a formation. You'd have a firing line. All these, you know, these eight beautiful big cannons all pointed in the same direction. The roar of these things would give off when they fired at the same time is amazing, okay? I loved artillery. Now, you don't have to have that anymore. These cannons can be in eight different places all over the map. And when a fire mission's called down, their cannons can still be coordinated by computer, so they're all firing in the same place. Doesn't matter where they're at.
You know, this brings an interesting point, man, for maybe the ending of towards the ending of the show here. The idea that due to the fact we've gotten so modernized with our warfare, the fact that, hey, you can just push a button, you can play with a little joystick, that it's made war itself sterile. It has sterilized what should be a bloody conquest. You should have your troops sitting on the ground, firing, shooting, the whole nine. See, my personal opinion is the fact that the reason why a lot of these soldiers are coming back so fucked up in the head, some of them are, you know, committing suicide, is the fact that it is so easy to do, and it trips them up mentally. Whereas, if they were actually on the ground fighting, it wouldn't be as bad on them, in my opinion.
You know, I see your point, sort of, but the direction I'm going in with this is, so you got these soldiers, you've committed lives to this cause. What is the cause? If it's a political agenda, if you're going into a country to enforce your political economic will upon another country, then you are going to have soldiers who are fucked up. They're going to wonder, why did I take a bullet? Why did I lose a limb? Why did I kill somebody else? For what purpose? Whereas if you actually have the kind of bloodshed we've been talking about, if you actually told these soldiers you are fighting for territory, you are fighting to secure your livelihood, and hey, if you find a box of rubies or rupees or whatever the hell it is you find that shit, spoils of war, send that shit home. That's
yep.
yours. That you're killing for a purpose, a legitimate purpose, a purpose you can wrap your head around, these boys and girls wouldn't be coming home all fucked up. They would be coming
We've had something like that since World War II. We have not had a war that the lines were completely black and white. Some people could say Vietnam, perhaps, but even that one was really kind of in the gray area and a little shady.
Well, and World War II was black and white only because our politicians had the sense to make it see it that way. It was a political war that, you know, we had reason to go after Japan, but we didn't have reason to go after Germany.
Yeah.
Other than our allies were going to be fucked with. I mean, there was just as much likelihood that Germany tried to, you know, talk to Britain about an alliance. They reached out to the United States about an alliance. Germany did not want to be our enemy, necessarily. They wanted to see their program spread out to, because, I mean, they're all related. You know, France, Britain, Germany, the United States, all those countries are related by blood.
Yeah, true.
You know, good fine Scandinavian blood, actually. So they wanted these people, their brothers, to see the light, basically. Now, you know, their program was bullshit. It was, you know, completely irrational. There was, you know, we had a damn good reason not to join up with them. But we had, up until Pearl Harbor, no intent of actually committing our forces to that war. Because it wasn't our business. It had nothing to do with our territory. You know, we were making money, to be honest, supplying whoever bought supplies from us.
Yep.
Right. So, and that's going back to the whole mechanized militia. If you're just going to be fighting wars for political whatever, well then, you know, the only reason that you have, when we talked about this idea, if the reason we were told that you actually had soldiers still fighting is because you wanted to show as a nation that you were so committed to your cause that you're willing to shed blood to achieve it.
Isn't that a sick
All
idea,
right.
actually, especially in this modern age?
Right. Well, it's you know, it's bullshit because some of the causes we're talking about, you know, all we're doing is we're basically bullying other countries. You know what
yep.
Japan did during Desert Storm, right?
Actually, I'm unaware.
You know what they wrote checks. That was their commitment. That was we're not sending soldiers over there because you know what? Iraq doesn't have shit to do with us. Or, you know, Iraq doesn't. They're not coming to us and trying to take over our territory. They're not doing a goddamn thing. And if they want to go after Kuwait. The only problem we have with Iraqis, the only problem they have with Iraqis going into Kuwait is that it might fuck with oil prices. So how do you deal with an economic issue? Right. How do you deal with an economic issue? You write a check. You pay some money. to correct the economic issue. And, you know, and Saddam Hussein saying, any of these countries, frankly, saying that, you know what, that territory is our territory. We need those resources. Our people need that, whatever it is. We're going to go after it and we're going to take it. That's a legitimate reason to go to war.
Yes, it is.
It's not the way we do things in modern society, but it's a legitimate reason.
Now, the reason we don't do it in modern society is because we're basically told that we have everything we need. We are bred to believe that we do not need anything. Anything we need can easily be bought or paid for in one way or another.
Right, right. And well, that it's, you know what, nothing that we might need is worth the conflict. That's another thing we're told. It's another thing we're being taught, is that you shouldn't have to work for anything. You shouldn't have to suffer and sacrifice for anything. It should just be given to you. And it's making a society of sheep, you know, so that when the people that actually have the will to shed some blood to get something done, those are the people that are going to take over. Those are the people that will rule. And it's a dangerous place to be. It used to be the reason the United States was a kick-ass country is because every motherfucker in it was willing to shed some blood, was willing to sweat and to toil, was willing to grab the rifle off from above the fucking fireplace and go shoot somebody for trying to say, hey, you know what, this land that you think is yours, no, this is my shit now. You know, oh, yep. Really, let me grab my gun and we'll talk about that. That was the attitude in the United States. Now you've got people in the United States saying, no, you shouldn't have a gun. No,
yeah,
no, you shouldn't be. Right, right. So, anyways, we got about just 2 minutes left, and we got some complaints last time about how we didn't roll the outro with enough time.
Yeah,
so
we kind of screwed up last week.
Yeah. So I don't know what we're going to be talking about for the next show topic. I think I'm going to get that figured out here in a little bit. Any thoughts? Anything you want to talk about next week?
It's up to you, man. Pretty much, I still have a whole list that we still have, you know, stuff to go through on that one. Actually, want to go dig through that again?
Right on. I'll pull from something in that list and get the show scheduled. And for those listening to this show in the archive, check out the Ooze WordPress. You can go ahead and find out what the next show is going to be and comment. Get involved in the conversation on the Ooze WordPress page, the blog, so that we have even more to talk about this hour up when we get back next Tuesday at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's it, man. I'm going to roll the outro. You have a good night.
Yeah, you too, man. Later.
Later.